Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. And become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Today's episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark is brought to you by Shudder, the premium streaming video service from AMC Networks with the largest, fastest-growing selection of horror, thriller, and supernatural content in the world. I'll be back after tonight's first story to tell you a little more about my own experience with Shudder. Until then, take a moment to double-bolt your doors and double-check your windows, and check beneath your bed. You never know who else might be tuning in along with you tonight. Stay tuned. The show is about to begin.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. I'm your host, Otis Gyre. Allow me to welcome you to Season 3, Episode 24, our season finale. I can't believe it's been 24 episodes already, and that Season 4 and our 73rd episode overall starts next week already. Whew! It's been quite the journey. And I have all of you in my listening audience to thank for it. Thank you so much for being there, and for supporting me and this program. In tonight's extra special episode, I'll be celebrating the conclusion of our third season by performing four stories for you, including an epic finale that clocks in at over an hour and a half in duration. Tonight, you'll hear terrifying tales about everything from ominous omens and aquatic abominations to household horrors and paranormal pursuits. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now it's time to get started, so lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. Our first tale of terror this evening comes to us courtesy of author Roxanne Wilds. Without further ado, I present to you Scorpion River. I'd always been afraid of Scorpion River. Ever since I was 8, I'd gone with my aunt, uncle, and older cousins into the wilderness of southern Arizona, where we'd spend 2 nights in their rickety blue camper. We weren't alone. Around 10 other families joined us for that December weekend. The adults sat around the fire swapping stories of better days, back when the economy was stable and kids respected their elders. The 7 or so of us children quickly grew bored with the talk and went exploring. To call Scorpion River a river was an overstatement. Water only ran there once or twice a year. The rest of the time it was just an expanse of sand. Our campsite was closer to the river, yet the sandy cliffs meant that one had to fight through a half mile of cat claws and ancient mesquite trees to get to it. Yet every day, without fail, we'd make the trip. It was worth it to play games of tag in the flat sand, or to make forts below the huge cottonwoods which lined that part of the river. Every time an adult would come with us, much to our annoyance, they made sure we kept to the stretch of cottonwoods. The only time we were allowed to leave that was when the group of adults decided to hike to what we called the funnel. The funnel was a natural rock formation, a vertical tunnel cut up through the cliffs on the other side of the river. It was beautiful, a pipe of smooth, reddish stone which seemed to lead up into the sky itself. It was easily my favorite part of the trip. The only thing I didn't like was getting there. To reach the funnel, we had to pass through what I call Raven Forest. Here the trees were close together, the bark blackened by some ancient fire. Every time we went through, the screeching of ravens would fill the air. The light played tricks on your eyes, making it seem as if there were figures standing in the shadows. As I grew older, the feeling of unease grew, too. I began to hear whispering in the trees, voices always too low to be understood, but distinctly unfriendly. I spoke about it to my cousin Jade, but she dismissed it, telling me it was my imagination. Every year, more and more strange things would happen, unexplainable, but just strange enough to put me on edge. Nothing stayed where we put it. Camper doors would open and close of their own accord. The campfire would sometimes flare without warning. My aunt and uncle once brought their German Shepherd, thinking he would have a fun time running with the kids. For the entire trip, he stayed close to camp, whimpering whenever we attempted to get him to come down to the river with us. As strange as things got, nothing downright out of the ordinary happened. Not until 1 year, the year Jade and I turned 18, when my 16-year-old cousin, Mason, decided to come camping with us. He was a tall youth, big for his age, a football player with something to prove. As there were 3 of us and we were older now, my aunt and uncle decided we could go out by ourselves. Every chance we got, we'd went down to the river to explore, no longer hindered by the younger children. Jade and Mason often got annoyed with me, as I always refused to enter Raven Forest. Jade wanted to climb the trees, as she was going through a gymnastics phase, while Mason wanted to prove he wasn't afraid of an old spooky forest. One evening, the two couldn't stand it anymore and told me they were going in whether I came with them or not. I declined, and the two disappeared into the woods, leaving me alone at the edge of the river. I sat down on the little cliff and waited as the sun began to sink below the tree line. I gradually became aware of a horrible smell coming from a stand of nearby bushes. I grew curious and went over to investigate. The bushes were low and thorny, forcing me to crawl to get through. I crawled on my hands and knees over the uneven ground, finally stopping when my fingers touched something soft. I took up my phone flashlight and shone it on the ground. Instantly, I was moving backward, ignoring the thorns which tore at my hair. For lying on the ground was a dead pile of songbirds, heads missing, surrounded by blood and ants. I pulled myself to the edge of the river and stayed there, breathing hard, trying not to throw up. Several minutes later, my cousins returned, talking and laughing. They stopped when they saw me sitting on the cold ground, shivering. "What happened?" Jade asked. I numbly pointed toward the stand of trees. The two of them went over to look, returning a moment later, faces grave. "What would do that?" I asked. "Some kind of predator?" Jade suggested. "You know, like a fox, a coyote, something. Why would it just pile them up like that? There must be 50 of them, all lined up in a circle like..." "Let's leave," Mason interrupted. "It's almost dark." We started toward the other side of the river, walking at first, then running. "I really think we're overacting," Jade said when we reached the other side and paused to catch our breath. "There must be some logical explanation. Maybe they just happened to be there and weren't arranged like it seemed. Did any of us look very hard?" "The heads were missing," Mason said. "Explain that." "They might have rotted away." The longer we talked, the more reasonable the birds seemed. After around 10 minutes of proposing theories, we were calm. Mason decided to try climbing the cliff to get to camp, instead of going through the riverbed, which was muddy from a recent rain. He'd just gotten a new pair of red Converse and didn't want them ruined. Jade and I, knowing how many thorn bushes were between us and camp, decided to go down the river before going up the cliff. We split up. Once we were about halfway up the path, we heard rustling in the bushes. Thinking it was a deer, we ignored it and continued. Jade stopped to tie her shoe. "We should go up to the funnel," she said, bending down. "By ourselves?" I asked, scared yet a little excited. "Yeah. That'd be..." I stopped. Behind her, in the thorn bushes, was a dark shape. It was hunched, humanoid, though in the growing darkness it was hard to make out details. I glanced at Jade, and when I looked back, it was gone. "What is it?" Jade asked. I pointed. There was something there. "Yes, probably Mason." She stood up. "Hey, Mason, get out here and stop trying to scare us." "Ah, come on," he called. I was relieved until he stepped out of the woods on the other side of the trail. There's no way he could have moved that fast and that quietly. I tried to explain what I'd seen to the two of them, but they just laughed it off. We spent the night around the campfire, listening to my uncle play guitar. That night, nothing strange happened, and we all woke early, eager to go on our trip. We left just after the sun rose over the cliffs. In the daylight, the forest was decidedly less creepy. We went around a half mile down the river before climbing the cliff. This was the first time we'd done it alone, but we were confident we knew the way. At first, everything went pretty well. We found a little trail and started towards the cliff ahead. Pretty soon, I began to notice that this part of the forest wasn't familiar. The trees weren't even close together as usual, and even though the sun was by now high in the sky, it seemed dark. Then the coyotes began howling. Though I knew they weren't dangerous to humans, it was still eerie hearing them in the distance. "Maybe we should go back," I suggested. "Nah," Jade said. "We can still find the funnel. Let's just get off this path. It should be like a mile west of here." "I'll go first," Mason said. "I've got a leather jacket and you don't." When we left the path, I thought I heard the whispering, though it was hard to hear over the racket my cousin was making by breaking a path through the trees for us. Finally, we reached a small stream bed, long since dried up, yet not overgrown. A minute or two later, we reached a funnel. We all instantly knew it wasn't the one we were used to. It was smaller, yet went further into the cliff face, more of a canyon than a tunnel. As we entered it, I noticed something far up near the top, about 200 feet above us. It was too far away to make out what it was, so I decided to climb a little way up the side of the other side of the canyon. Meanwhile, Jade and Mason went further into the canyon. I could hear them talking as I climbed up far up the other side of the wall as I could get. As I still couldn't see what it was, I decided to take a picture with my phone. I pointed it and snapped a picture, deciding to see if my uncle, who was into photography, could somehow enhance it. I started to climb down and tripped. I landed hard on the floor of the funnel, glad for my thick coat. I heard rustling in the bushes to my left and waited to hear the others laughing at my clumsiness. Yet no sound came. "Guys," I called. "We're up ahead," Jade faintly replied. I started to go after them, having to squeeze between the trees and under the bushes, which clung stubbornly to the dirt floor of the funnel. Suddenly, I had the feeling of being watched. Again, branches cracked. I wanted to turn and tell whoever it was to cut it out, but my body wouldn't respond. I froze as the sounds grew closer and closer, the whispering increasing in volume. Then the spell was broken as Mason called my name. The frozen feeling disappeared, and I turned, ready to confront whatever it was. Nothing was there. I hurried to join my cousins, who stood below the object on the funnel wall. From here it was apparent that it was a bit bigger than I was. Something dripped from it, leaving trails of dark liquid on the pale wall. Around it circled several ravens. "Think that's a nest?" Jade asked before I could tell them what had happened. "Well, maybe," Mason replied, shading his eyes. We stayed there for a few moments, trying to make out what it was before growing bored. "Race you to the entrance," Mason called. He ran off through the trees, ignoring the thorny bushes. Jade and I followed more slowly, knowing we couldn't beat him. Then, above the sound of our own footsteps, I became aware of a distant voice, rising and falling in some sort of haunting song. It sounded female, but there was something unnatural about it, as if we were hearing a recording played backward. "Do you hear that?" Jade asked. I nodded. We ran to the entrance of the funnel where we met Mason. "Did you hear singing?" I asked. "No," he replied. "What are you talking about? Didn't you hear anything?" She shook her head. "No, we should head back." We were then confronted by a problem. We didn't know exactly how to get back to the river without having to push our way through thorn bushes. Finally, we had no choice but to start moving. Mason led the way, pushing through thorns and bushes without a care. Jade and I followed more slowly, carefully avoiding the worst of the thorns. After a few moments, the two of us were separated from him. We found ourselves in a circle of thorn bushes with no easy way out. "Mason!" I called. He didn't respond, though he couldn't have gotten more than 10 feet ahead. We sat down, deciding he'd come back eventually. My feeling of unease began to grow. Finally, Jade spoke, voice small and quivering. "I don't think we're alone," she said. I nodded, feeling my muscles begin to lock with fear. From the direction of the funnel came the sound of something pushing through trees. Jade's eyes met mine, and I knew she could hear it too. "We need to get out of here," I said, eyeing the thorns which surrounded us. For some reason, I had no idea how we'd gotten inside the little clearing. The sounds were growing louder, along with the whispering. All at once, I realized something. The voices had never been threatening me. They'd been trying to warn me. I got to my feet and pulled Jade up. "We're leaving," I said. I pushed through the bushes, ignoring the stinging of the cuts the thorns left on my arms and face. Jade followed, and we ran through the forest. At one point, I tripped, and Jade pulled me to my feet. Behind us, the sounds were growing closer and more urgent. The voices weren't whispering anymore, they were screaming. For what seemed like 1,000 years, we ran through the forest. Though it was only 1 mile, it felt like 100. Finally, we ran out into the river, nearly knocking over Mason. The voices stopped, along with the crashing of whatever was pursuing us. "Where were you?" he asked as we tried to catch our breath. "I've been calling for you for hours." "Hours?" I asked. "We weren't apart for more than 20 minutes. He shook his head. "I was just about to go get help." I noticed that the sun, directly overhead when we left the funnel, was beginning to set. Jade laughed, the sound a little too high. "We must have looked dumb," she said, "running from nothing like that." "Nothing?" I asked. "We must have imagined it." "Really, Jade?" "It's probably just some animal." We started walking back to camp, and soon I began to believe we'd imagined whatever had happened, too. I heard the sound of the singing and ignored it, decided I was imagining it again. Then I noticed that the other two were looking at me in horror. They could hear it, too. We began running, not stopping until we reached the camp. When we told the story, the adults just laughed, blaming it on overactive imaginations. My uncle, who'd been visiting the area since he was a child, claimed there was no second funnel. We soon packed up and drove home. As it was late by the time we reached our hometown, I decided to spend the night with Jade and go to my house the following morning. While we were there, I remembered the picture I'd taken of the thing in the funnel. I asked my uncle to enhance it, and he agreed. "It'll probably be a nest," he said as he worked. "You probably disturbed the ravens, which decided to chase you off." I didn't agree, though I didn't say so. "Oh, kids," he continued with a smile. "I used to be like you. One time I remember thinking..." He stopped. The smile disappeared instantly. He got up and backed away from the computer. Then he turned and ran for the phone. Jade and I looked at the now enhanced picture. The thing was not a nest. In fact, it was a body, headless like the birds we'd seen in the tree grove. Though the picture was still blurry, the jacket the figure wore was unmistakably black leather. On his feet was a pair of bright red Converse. Just then the doorbell rang. "Girls," my aunt called. "Mason is here."
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
I hope you enjoyed Scorpion River by author Roxanne Wilds. Up next, we've got a tale from author Jacob Newell that'll make you think twice before you ever set foot on a boat again. Before I proceed to transfer the heebie-jeebies to you, though, I'd like to tell you a bit more about tonight's sponsor, Shudder. The only video streaming service for horror fans like you and I, and a special offer they've got for those of you listening in tonight. AMC Network Shudder is a premium streaming video service, super serving fans of all degrees with the best selection of horror and thrillers. Shudder's irrepressible and thriving community revels in all things provocative, evocative, and dangerous. From bantering with Shudder on social media and contributing fantastic, irreverent reviews to relishing in member-only perks such as exclusive releases and VIP movie screenings, Shudder believes there's safety in numbers. Don't be left in the dark alone. You can stream great thrillers, horror, and suspense for just $5.99 a month, or save yourself nearly $15 and sign up annually for only $56.99 a year. Shudder has the largest, fastest-growing, human-curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. Think of it as the Netflix of horror. You can count on Shudder.com to keep you guessing with the unexpected. Each and every week, new edge-of-your-seat suspense, spine-tingling thrillers, and shocking horrors are added to their already formidable library. And Shudder is uncluttered, too. After signing up, you'll have unlimited access to stream ad-free on all your favorite devices, including iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, Android devices, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, and for our gamers out there, Xbox One. So, no matter what your choice of device might be, there's no need to go without your fix of the frightening. Shudder's got your back. And best of all, Shudder's content is unparalleled in the genre. With their unique collection of exclusive and original films and series, horror classics, and blockbuster hits, you'll never run out of nightmare fuel. We here at Scary Stories Told in the Dark have been signed up with Shudder for months now, and I can't believe what we were missing out on. Collections like classic slashers take me back to the glory days of suspense, and if you're in the mood for some femme fatales, the Vengeance is Hers set will make certain you'll never underestimate a woman's penchant for mayhem again. And of course, there are horror comedies too, so you can enjoy a good laugh at someone else's expense. My team and I love the classics, so that alone was worth the price of admission for us. Once you add in all the vast collection of new content and their extensive, exclusive library, none of which you'll find on Netflix, there's no reason to ever look anywhere else for our horror film fix. The exclusives they have, and are always adding, are absolutely incredible. The new Shudder original, Dead Wax, is available now, as is their original documentary, Horror Noir, as well as Lizzie and Mandy, starring Nicolas Cage. And of course, let's not forget, Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich, which your nostalgia-loving self won't find anywhere else either. And all of this is just the tip of the blood-soaked iceberg. There's so much more lurking inside, just waiting to be discovered. Best of all, Shudder's always got something amazing to look forward to. On June 6th, just recently, their brand new exclusive film, Boar, went live, and you can check it out now, included with your membership. And last month, two other originals, The Night Shifter and The Ranger, landed on the network. You won't want to miss any of them, and you don't have to when you sign up today. All of this and much, much more is available and at your fear-loving fingertips for just $5.99 a month. And this month, as a listener of my program, you can get 30 days of Shudder totally free by using the promo code TOLD. That's right. Try Shudder free for 30 days. Go to Shudder.com. That's Shudder.com. And use promo code TOLD to let them know that Otis Gyre and Scary Stories Told in the Dark sent you. Simple as that. Once again, that's Shudder.com and promo code TOLD. What do you got to lose except maybe some sleep? Who needs sleep anyway? Yeah. Now, turn those lights down low and get cozy. We've got another frightening tale coming right up. Our second story today comes to us from author Jacob Newell, I present to you The Midnight Lockup. October 22, 2012. This story began about 5 days ago, but I've only now just gotten around to writing it down. I'll take my time to make sure I share everything with you, and the fact that this whole ordeal hasn't left my mind makes me feel certain that I won't miss any details. It's going to be a very long story, maybe too long for some. But I just need some sort of explanation to keep me from feeling insane. I'm hoping that if I write it all down, maybe I or someone else can make some sense of it, as little as there may be. Well, I suppose the story actually began 48 years ago, and the only reason I know anything about it is because of my granddad. From the 60s up until the late 80s, my granddad used to work on the ships as a deckhand. He worked on many different ships under the wing of many different captains, and so the sea, being the exciting place that it is, left him with hundreds of stories to tell. When I was a young boy, I would continuously ask him to tell me these stories, even the ones I'd already heard. Some of them were gruesome, some of them were funny. There were even a few sad tales, but only one of them was genuinely scary. I remember almost all of the stories that he shared with me, but I think it's obvious which one stood out the most. My granddad was 23 in 1964, and he'd just been drafted onto a ship that was delivering cargo to countries in South America. It was no different than the other two ships that he'd previously worked on, except maybe it was a bit bigger. I won't give the real name of the ship, but for future reference, we'll call it the CWS. My granddad began the story by explaining to me just how strange the captain of the ship was, how he was a lot happier and friendlier than other captains he'd worked with, but only during the day. Once the clock was nearing midnight, he would become paranoid, angry, and agitated, the complete opposite to his day-walking self. He'd scurry around the ship, briskly rushing everyone into their private quarters, ignoring any questions they would ask. Then, just before locking each door, he would stare into their eyes and plead with them not to try and leave their rooms until the morning came. Almost everyone listened. At this point, I should mention that the captain had an annoying habit that the crew had to put up with. He would sing "Do You Want to Know a Secret" by the Beatles all day, every day without fail, and that's the only song he would sing. Even in the night, they could hear him humming the tune from behind his locked cabin door. After being on the ship for a week or so, all of the sailors were beginning to grow more and more annoyed at the actions of the captain. His seemingly split personality, his constant singing, all of his annoying traits. But most of all, it was the way he locked everyone in their rooms at night, almost as if they were children not to be trusted. That was, until one night, changed the way they were all feeling. It was the usual time of night when the captain would dart about, clumsily rushing everyone into their cages. But one of the deckhands, J.P., had a plan. Earlier on in the day, he had altered the lock on his door so that he could open it from the inside of his room with ease by using a magnet. My granddad was told that J.P. had the intention of getting everyone else out of their rooms for a party on the lower deck, so naturally they were all excited and ready for a night of drinking. With his ear up against the door, my granddad listened intently to what was going on outside of his room. Over the captain's monotonous pop song droning, he heard a lock snap open and the hushed creak of a lone metal door. Just as footsteps began echoing throughout the empty halls, the humming stopped. As my granddad winced at the door in annoyance, he heard, all of them heard, vicious thuds and screams of pain, howling and scratching at the floor, while J.P. begged for help. His cries were growing fainter, almost as if he was being dragged through the ship lower and lower into the steel abyss. As the fading remainder of his pain erupted from the halls, my granddad stepped back in horror as all movement outside the door had stopped and the damp corridor echoed silence. The next morning, as the door snapped open, nobody wanted to step outside, but they had to. After mustering enough courage, my granddad finally stepped out into the hall as the most putrid odor he'd ever smelt surrounded him. Holding his nose and gagging, he looked around to see a small puddle of what looked like blood and oil mixed together. The only assumption that the crew could come up with was that the inmate had simply gotten out and sustained an injury. Curious as to what the captain would say, they all got ready for a day of work. They sprinted through the foul-smelling hall and onto the upper deck. Once they arrived upstairs, they noticed the captain was already up there, singing his usual song as if he didn't have a care in the world. In an uproar, the crew questioned him on what had gone on the night before, but they didn't get an answer, he just sang. None of them ever saw J.P. again, and the next 3 months were the longest of their lives. The rest of the time on the ship was dictated by the captain. The crew became quiet and despondent as the Beatles reigned over their eardrums. The work they once loved had become dreary, and the ship felt like a prison. The crew never questioned the captain, and no one dared to leave their rooms after hours. Until one night, a couple of months after what happened to J.P., my granddad finally had enough, and curiosity got the better of him. He took on the same plan that J.P. had, except he was going to be more careful. As my granddad said, it was the captain's fault, and I needed to know for the sake of us all. It was 2:03 a.m., and my granddad finally mustered up the courage to approach the door. He took the magnet and slowly began to ease the lock to the left. A second or so before the lock snapped open, the humming stopped, and a huge bang echoed violently through the darkness. He forced the door forward with all his strength, hoping that whatever was out there wouldn't get in, but nothing tried to. He slowly inched the door towards him, enough so that he could peer into the dimly lit hallway in front of him. As he did so, he heard the quiet pitter-patter of something stealthily bounding towards him within the darkness far ahead. The smell came back and filled his room. After taking a moment to gag into his sleeve as if out of nowhere, a heavy panting made itself known from just outside the door. After momentarily freezing, he slowly began to react to the situation he was in. I don't know why he did it or how he got the courage, but he gazed back out into the hallway. My mind has never forgotten the look of sincerity and terror on his face as he described to me in detail what he witnessed in that corridor. In my granddad's words, it was a four-legged creature that had thick, razor-sharp hair that seemed to be coated in oil or tar. I don't know if it was the smell or the fear I was feeling, but it made my vision quite hazy for a moment and gave me the worst pain in the back of my head. It was on eye level with me when it was on all fours, so I can't imagine how big it would have been if it stood upright. It had black hooves on its hind legs, but it had what looked like black, clenched human fists on its front legs. Its face was the worst. Where its mouth should have been, there were just three holes in the left, right, and center of the usual place a smile would be. It looked as if they had been ripped to create something resembling a grimace, then joined together by two large slices in between. Its eyes were shaped like that of a cat's, but with a white sclera, all black pupils, much larger and turned on their sides. It stared right at me, eyes widened, and opens its mouth to reveal hundreds of razor-sharp, dark yellow teeth, and let out a deep human shriek. That's when I slammed the door, locked it, and passed out for the night. After that incident, my granddad was never curious again. He still had another 2 weeks, and then he knew he was off the CWS for good. For the remainder of the time there, he stayed silent like the rest of the crew. Every now and then he'd go tell someone what he had witnessed, but he decided it would be best to just stay quiet. Leaving day couldn't come fast enough, and as he hopped off the ship with the rest of the crew, he looked back at the CWS for one last time as the captain waved off into the distance, singing his song while the new crew got to know the ship. A year or so later, my granddad heard from a friend that the ship had been found off the coast of Argentina, completely abandoned. After that, he never heard anything of it again. My granddad's 71 now, long retired and happy as ever. After I picked the local newspaper up last week, his memory was jolted in what must have felt like a dream, or a nightmare, made his heart drop. The CWS was docked at an old harbor not 3 hours away from where he lives, and is being used as an attraction to bring a bit more money to the area. I was sure that my granddad would see it as a tour of his worst fears, but nonetheless, he looked at me almost instantly and said, "We have to go." So we did. October 6th, 2012. It was only a few days after noticing the opportunity in the newspaper that my granddad and I finally decided to go and experience the CWS in all of her former horror. We gathered everything that we would need for the trip and set off in the early hours of the morning. By the time we'd arrived at the harbor, it was getting near midday, so we headed toward a nearby cafe for some lunch. I'd like to think that we were both hungry enough to merit a meal, but I had the feeling that we were just stalling for time. We took a table with a window view so we could admire the ship for as long as we wanted to before going in. My granddad seemed so distant as he looked up at that rusted metal monolith, his eyes wide open, as if trying to pierce the steel. In his fixation, he barely spoke a word for a good 20 minutes or so. After the food we had hardly touched went cold, he finally loosened his gaze and faced me. "I'm ready to go in," he said. Heading toward the floating structure, I began to realize how nervous I seemed to be, sweating profusely as huge metal butterflies crippled my stomach. Yet I had no reason to feel this way. I suppose the story had a bigger impact on me than I had thought. We trudged through the puddles and black land surrounding the harbor until we finally hit the pier. Looking over at my granddad, he seemed to be a lot more relaxed than I had anticipated. We climbed the stairs up toward a huge metal door on the right side of the ship and approached the ticket barrier. My granddad, being over 60, meant he only had to pay £2, whereas I had to pay full admission. Not a bad price for brain-deteriorating nightmares. Then, with a couple of deep breaths and what seemed like infinite hesitation, we stepped onto the CWS. Once inside, we slowly made our way to the top of the ship to look around. It took just a moment to realize how safe and well-kept it looked after all these years, so I began to relax as the images of a dark, damp ghost ship receded in my mind. We started off upstairs and had the intention of making our way down to the orlop deck, but after a second look at the small leaflet that had been handed to us, I noticed that we could only experience half of the ship. The bottom three decks had seemingly disappeared off the map, leaving us with only a part of the experience, although I'm sure my granddad didn't mind after all that had happened. After revisiting a few of the old stories he'd told me as a child, we finally decided to leave the quarterdeck and head on down the stairs to the next floor. Up until now, we'd only seen three other people wandering about on the ship with us. We just assumed that there were others on the lower decks. But once we went downstairs, there were no other people in sight. This deck seemed dirtier, and it didn't really have anything to offer. It was mostly just empty space and a few metal doors that were sealed shut. There would usually just be a few cargo crates on this deck. He muttered, but that was it. We reached the final deck that we were able to explore and made our way down the narrow corridors ahead. Looking left and right, we could see nothing. Every door seemed to be locked, and other corridors were completely blocked off. After speeding through a metal maze for nearly 5 minutes without seeing anything worth mentioning, and already having explored the other two empty decks, I couldn't help feel but cheated out of an interesting experience and my own money. As we neared the end of the deck, we finally reached a huge door that was actually open, but just as I turned around to express my disbelief, I realized that my granddad had not been following me. I stopped in my tracks at the edge of the door and peered down the path I had walked. I shouted for a full minute, but he was nowhere around. I know I should have backtracked to find him, but I had finally found an open door, and somewhere worth exploring. I assumed that he would find me shortly. After all, with all of the locked doors and blocked corridors, there was only one way forward. I stepped inside and scanned the room. It was a huge area with at least 20 tables in and an old, dirty kitchen. It was clear what this place was, but I couldn't help wondering why everything was so neglected on this part of the ship when the quarterdeck was so spotless. Maybe this room was meant to be locked, too. I made my way into the kitchen and began to look around. Everything was old, damp, and rotting. There were still plates on tables and coats on the backs of chairs. It was clear that I wasn't supposed to be in here. As you can expect, I was getting a bad feeling from the place, so I decided to leave. Just as I turned to exit, I noticed a door in the far corner of the room. I didn't want to approach the door, but I felt like I needed to. After all, it was probably locked anyway. Dodging tables and various stains on the floor, I slowly made my way over to the corner of the room. I placed my hand on the cold steel of the huge metal handle and mustered enough strength to pull it down, and then it opened. A huge wall of damp air hit me as I recoiled and coughed into my hands. I examined the darkness to try and make out where I was, but I couldn't hear or see a thing. At this point, I wasn't sure what to expect. The door was unlocked, so for all I knew, it was part of the tour. I felt my way along the side of the cold wall to try and find a light switch. Then, as the lights flickered on, I realized where I was. I stood at the top of a set of stairs and staring down into puddles of dim light at the foot of the steps. Now I knew why the other decks were unavailable for viewing. I took the 6 steps down into the yellow light so I could get a closer look around at what was hidden on the deck. The dim light showed a miserable labyrinth of cold metal and dripping walls, a rusted case of neglected memories. Once at the bottom of the stairs, I couldn't help but think of the story and the way my dad described the setting. This all looked very familiar to the images in my mind. I navigated my way further into the dark. The murky light, only now as strong as a candle. As countless drips echoed throughout the domain, I couldn't help but remember the silence from not 2 minutes ago. I must have wandered further in than I thought, I mumbled to myself. That's when I reached a small staircase leading further down into a red glow. I made my way down the stairs and noticed 8 doors, almost in a circle, surrounding me. One of the doors was bigger than all the others and centered at the back of the room. Above it, lit up with a small red bulb, was the word Captain. It was then that I knew where I was. It was almost exactly how I had pictured it. but the fear I felt when imagining it was nothing like when I was there. It was always in the back of my mind that there was a chance my granddad had just created the story for me when I was a child, or maybe even exaggerated a real experience he had. But now I knew that he'd told me the truth all along. With my heart growing cold and pounding faster, I turned to head back upstairs, but I froze. That's when I heard the singing. Listen. You want to know a secret? You promise not to tell? Closer. Let me whisper in your ear. I felt sick to my stomach as the song echoed through the halls, growing louder. It was impossible that this was happening to me. I headed straight back up the stairs. I never run so fast in my entire life. Just as I got to the top, I heard a huge bang from below, followed by a hideous, deep shriek. I carried on sprinting toward the dim light at the bottom of the staircase that I had so stupidly followed before. My head began pulsating with the worst pain I had ever felt, and I started to grow dizzy. As I ran, I could hear a quiet pouncing following me from behind, hitting the puddles and panting heavily. The worst smell hit me as I was almost back upstairs. I knew it was close. I knew it was real. I reached the top and slammed the door behind me, locking it straight away. As I stumbled into a nearby table, a ferocious thud hit the metal just once. I picked myself up straight away and headed back down the corridors. I finally found my way out of the maze and back onto the quarterdeck, where my granddad stood. I was shaking as I tried to get my words out. He took me off the ship and back into the car. I never told him what happened, and at the time I wasn't sure if he thought I was joking or if I really did experience something. I just wish he was there with me to have kept me from going through the door. I spoke to him yesterday and told him everything. Thankfully, he believed me and had me talk him through every little detail. Going over it so many times has helped me a lot more than I thought it would. I never witnessed what was following me through those halls, so I can't give you details of its appearance, but I know it was definitely the same creature that terrified my granddad all those years ago. A lot of research and countless phone calls to some of my granddad's old sailor friends, and we found, finally, some information. Apparently, the ship is docked at that specific harbor because the captain was born in the nearby town. In an 8-year run of the ship, he was the first and only captain that the CWS had, so out of respect, they placed the ship there. Nobody can explain to us how it went missing for 48 years and then suddenly appeared where it is now. It's been 5 days since I was on the ship, and I'm feeling a lot better than I initially did. That's why my granddad and I are going back to the ship. Yeah, I know it sounds ridiculous, but we feel like we have to. Within the next couple of hours, we'll be heading back to the CWS, but we're going to the nearby town first to talk to the locals and find out some more information. October 11th, 2012. It's been around 3 days since we got back from our trip to the CWS and the nearby town that we'd heard so much about. It took me a while to even process the fact that we were going back after what happened to me last time, but my granddad seemed keen, and I suppose you could say I needed some kind of closure. After all the research, hassling, and phone calls we'd made, it seemed like we had no choice but to further investigate. If only I could have known the story we were digging deeper into, I would never have dreamt of getting involved. We set off on Monday morning and decided to head straight on to the town, having no stops whatsoever. It was just approaching midday as we drove silently past the CWS. Remembering what happened to me and knowing that we would be back on the ship soon enough gave me the worst feeling in my stomach. The supposed nearby town was actually a fair distance away from where the CWS was docked. It took us almost another half an hour to witness the welcome sign, but we eventually made it. Nearing the town, passing by the mounds of unkept greenery and land, we expected it to be an old, desolate fishing village, with few people inhabiting. After all, the entire area we had passed up to now was horribly mistreated. Yet we noticed, as we were nearing the sea, that what we could see up ahead was beautiful. We kept on driving until we reached a small bridge that took us over into the town. And what a town it was! It was very well kept, and looked as if it got a good bit of business for a seemingly hidden little village. There were rows of shops either side of us, a small B&B, another harbor that held minuscule fishing boats, and a few rows of houses further back that were hidden behind the shops. I remember looking over at the fishing boat for a moment, then turning my head to the north to look at the CWS. I felt so small. After we had gotten over the shock of how nice the town was, we decided it would be wise to start looking for information immediately. We wandered the streets trying to find somewhere that we thought might be useful, and that's when I spotted it. In the midst of all the bustling shops, there was a small, dark, sweet shop in the far corner of my vision that caught my eye. I figured that maybe the person who owned the shop would know a thing or two about the CWS or the captain, so we headed on over. At first glance, anybody would assume that the shop was shut. Nobody was going in, and it looked as if it hadn't been in business for years, but when we approached the door, the sign told us otherwise. As we went inside, we were greeted by a friendly old man who looked too frail to even be out of his own house. He looked at us awkwardly, shaking with every breath, until my granddad finally decided to ask him a few questions, the first of which was, "Do you know anything about the ship, Doc, a few miles away? The CWS?" A look of anger filled his face. "No," he replied. My granddad asked him another question, and he gave us the same answer again. He must have said no at least 5 times, each time getting quicker and louder, until my grandfather, he couldn't even finish his sentence. We knew that he knew something, so we kept pushing the questions until he took a deep breath and wrote something down. "Take this and go see his sister. She may talk to you. Now leave." He then hurried us out of the door and back onto the street. After a quick bite to eat, we set off to find the house written down so that we could talk to the captain's sister. We arrived at a huge house on the other side of the village and knocked on the thick wooden door. A thin old woman opened up with a smile on her face. She said hello and happily invited us inside. It seemed like she hadn't had company in a long time. Her eyes were glazed over, almost as if she wasn't completely with us. Once inside, I cut to the chase. There was no need in making small talk. She was either going to talk to us, or she wasn't. I immediately asked, "Would you be willing to talk to us about your brother?" And to my surprise, she told me she'd love to. I let my granddad ask her the questions, as he knew more about the captain, the ship, the history. He had all of the knowledge, so I sat back and wrote down everything that was said in the interview. "Granddad, so the captain of the CWS, he was your brother?" "The captain's sister."
"His name was D.B. Yes, he was. A wonderful brother, too. Very caring when we were children. Of course, I didn't get to see enough of him when he got older. Being the captain of a ship is very hard work."
"Granddad, so when was the last time you saw D.B.?
"Captain's sister." "Oh, must be 53 years ago now. He died, sadly. I remember it vividly. September 9th, 1965.
"Granddad, how did you find out about his death?"
"Captain's sister." "It had been reported that The CWS had been found completely abandoned off the coast of Argentina. No bodies, no missing lifeboats, nothing. My brother being the captain, and both of our parents being dead, I received the call of his death. It was a very sad day for me. He just never knew how to stop it. Granddad, stop what? The thing that got rid of them all. They should have just stayed in their rooms. It would have been better for everyone. He wouldn't have felt so guilty, I'd imagine. It wasn't his fault, though. Granddad, stop what? What are you talking about? Captain's sister. I know about it, you know. He told me everything. It was on Christmas in 59 that he came back home to visit us. He was acting weird the whole time, twitching and mumbling to himself. He wouldn't talk to any of us properly all day until he took me off to one side before he was leaving. He told me that he'd found something and it had followed him. Followed him from the sea to the ship to the land. It just wouldn't leave him alone. I felt so sorry for him. He mentioned something about thinking that it was all just a fisherman's tale, so he had to find out. Then he kissed me on the cheek and left in a hurry. Later on, when I went upstairs, I saw that he had left me his journal on my bed. There was a lot of scribblings in there that hurt me to read. Granddad, did he tell you anything else? Was that definitely the last time you saw him? Captain's sister. That was the last time. I'll always remember it. The fear in his voice when he told me everything that had happened will stay with me until I die. As I said, he had seemed anxious all night, as if he had been followed. He went upstairs to use the toilet at one point, and everyone downstairs heard him shriek. He came down, shaking and awkwardly laughing, telling us that he thought he saw something in the mirror. It must have scared him terribly because he was very loud. Granddad, do you still have the journal? Can we look at it? Captain's sister, take it. It's upstairs in a box under my bed. I've only read it twice. I don't like the memories. After that, we thanked E.B. and left with the journal. By the time we got out of the house, it was beginning to get dark, so we decided to stay at the B&B for the night and revisit the CWS the next morning. As we were strolling down the street, heading for the B&B, I could have sworn I heard that same scream I heard on the ship. It echoed in the distance, but it shook me to the bone. That night, I read the journal while my granddad got his rest. It was interesting, chilling, disturbing, sad, confusing. As a child, I had never considered the possibility that the captain may have been an innocent man, but I did now. I'll update you again as soon as possible with what I found out in the journal, as well as giving you the details of my latest experience on the CWS. I never thought that it could get any worse, but it did. October 20, 2012. It's been over a week since the last time I shared my investigation with you and all, and a lot has gone on in that short time. Not only do I have to tell you all about the journal and my last venture aboard the CWS, but I also have news regarding what has happened to me in the last 9 days. None of what I'm going to tell you is good news, and it's going to be the last chapter in this ongoing nightmare of mine. So, you all know right now there's no happy ending. As I sat in the corner of the room, soaked in moonlight, I began to read through the old journal that I'd been handed by E.B., flicking through the first 20 pages or so, I could tell that the captain
had once been a completely different man than the psychopath had been told about in countless stories. He seemed like a friendly man, easy to get along with. I could tell that he was excited about his new job on the ship. He said he loved the feeling of being in charge and looking after his crew, and I could tell he meant it. He'd spend page after page describing the feeling he gets, waking up in the morning and breathing in the ocean air, knowing that the rest of his life would be spent at sea. It wasn't until about halfway through the journal that I noticed something that jogged my memory. We docked in Brazil yesterday to drop off cargo at some local businesses. I saw a bar not too far from the ship as we were loading it all onto the pier. We all know we'd end up there for a few beers, so the boys and I decided to head on down as soon as we finished offloading. I thought we were only going to have a few, but once you're in the mood, you're in the fucking mood. We'd gone a couple of months without booze and gambling, so we ended up there all night, and most of the morning, too. It was about 2 a.m., and I was playing poker with the bartender's son and a couple of his fishing buddies. I just won with a full house when one of the guys said, "You think we should tell him the tale?" They all looked at me, eyes wide open and smiling, as one of them began the story. He said that there's a local myth, a fisherman's tale, of a beast called the Cassatrap. It happened about 6 years ago, and has been a sailor's worst nightmare ever since. A salmon hunter from the nearby village was out fishing one day looking for his daily produce. He'd been out there from the morning until the late evening, and he'd felt that he'd finally found enough. It was pitch black out, so he decided to make his way home. But in doing so, he heard a loud scream from within the rocks up ahead. At first, he assumed that he was hearing things, but then it happened again. From the screaming and grinding of the stones, he felt sure that someone had somehow gotten trapped in the rock formation. As he neared the rocks, a huge creature stood up right in front of him and shrieked. He turned his boat around as fast as he could, but it was too late. The creature had already jumped on the ship. That's when he ended the story. I asked him, "What? Is that it?" Apparently, friends and family of the man noticed a considerable change in him. He was quieter and more wary of everything around him. He was on a boat a lot more, too. Not long after, though, the man killed himself. Considering its reputation as the nightmare of every sailor, there wasn't much to the story, but I suppose it was a bit frightening. I thought maybe it was true, but of course, it's just a fisherman's tale, so it's most likely bullshit. Although, if I'm ever out at sea and I hear a scream like that, there's no way I'll be going out to check it out. After finding that entry in the journal, I was curious to find out more. It wasn't until the last 3 pages of the journal that I found something that made me shiver. It actually happened. I don't know why it happened to us, but it did. We got caught in a storm last night, so we all had to pitch in. All of us were working hard on the quarterdeck when one of the crew said that he heard something strange. We all laughed it off and joked about him for hearing things, but then it happened again. At first, I thought it was the radio. The Beatles were playing, and we were all singing along, so every other sound was drowned out. But not this. We all heard it this time. It was an almost human shriek. I immediately thought of the story of the Cassatrap, but it couldn't have been. It was a myth. I looked over the right side of the ship and could just make out a shadow on some rocks. It looked up at the ship on all fours, screamed, and then dove under the water. Again, we heard the scream, but this time it was from the left side. We all made our way to the other side of the ship, and there it was. It stood up on its hind legs and followed us with its bright white eyes. It jumped from the fucking rocks right onto the ship. I don't know how, but it did. We looked it in the eyes as its mouth muttered words under its breath. Couldn't believe it actually spoke. with some kind of language none of us could understand. It sounded like hundreds of voices merged together, some talking, some screaming. After that, I stood there, watching my entire crew being ripped apart. I fucking stood there, I couldn't move. It was so effortless, I watched it punish them, biting, ripping, and throwing. After it was all done, it charged at me and pinned me down, screaming in my face. It shoved some of the flesh hanging from its jaw into my mouth. I vomited, I just couldn't take it. It looked into my eyes and growled, "Mine." Afterward, it charged right down to the bottom of the ship. I could hear the banging and feel the tremors all through the steel. I'm on my own in my room now with the door locked. I can still hear the voices of my crew. I just don't know what to do. After I'd finished reading the journal, I felt that I could make much more sense of the situation. Not everything was documented, but we had more information and could assume the answers to some of our lingering questions. I thought to myself that the captain had become part of the ship because the Khazatrap wouldn't allow him to leave. It was almost like a pet. He'd lock his crew away every night so that he could save them from being killed. He wasn't a bad person at all. I thought to myself about the song I'd heard on the ship. Was he still alive? Was he bound to the CWS and being kept there by the Khazatrap? This is the reason I had to go back on the ship. I couldn't live with myself knowing that I'd let an innocent man suffer. The next morning, I told my granddad that we should just leave everything and go back home. He didn't seem to mind. He was old and tired. He'd gotten to go back to the CWS, and that was enough for him. I drove him back home and told him I'd come and see him tomorrow. Then, as soon as his door closed, I took the same long journey back to the ship. With sheer determination and no fear, I clambered up the steps, bought my ticket, and made my way onto the deck. Once again, it was completely bare. There must have been 5 people on board at most. I set off down the stairs and into the maze of corridors I'd navigated before, but it was a lot quicker this time. As soon as I headed into the room and faced the door in the corner, that lack of fear I had 10 minutes ago had now been replaced with heavy breathing, trembling, and a sickly feeling in my stomach. I slowly made my way over to the door and placed my trembling hand on the lock. Then, just as I pulled on the handle, the huge metal door flung back and hit me in the face. I hit the floor and almost immediately fell unconscious, but not before I felt a hand grab me by the leg and drag me down the stairs into the darkness. Afterward, I awoke in a dirty room, lying on an old bed. As soon as I opened my eyes, it was there, staring at me from the other side of the room. It was on all fours and kept edging toward me, then taking a step back and screaming. I stared at it and felt as if I was staring death in the eye. I've never been so scared in my life. Its jaw jutted outward, and the same voice that sang the song I'd heard come out of its tattered mouth. The captain had not still been alive. It was the Khazatrap all along. I questioned myself on what it would want with me, but the only thing I could think of was it wanted me dead. It slowly moved toward me, grabbed me by the head, and showed me its sharp yellow teeth. Then, in a voice too dark to be human, it whispered, "Mine." After that, it let me go. It just let me walk out of the room and back off the ship. I haven't been the same since, and it definitely wasn't worth it for the few answers I'd gotten. How much truth can you find out about a myth, a legend, folklore, whatever it is? I've been in my house for the past week trying to get the courage to write this all down because I knew I'd have to go over it all again. It may have let me leave the ship, but it will never leave me alone. I can still hear the voices of 100 dead men, and sometimes it will appear to me. Whether it's outside my window or waiting for me as I turn around, It's always standing there, staring me down. It's only attacked me a couple of times, so I know it doesn't want to kill me. This will be the last time you hear from me. This is my final update. I thank you all for your time. I can deal with what has to be done from here on out. I finally know what to do. I forgot to mention, however, that I took another look at the captain's journal yesterday. I found a page that was stuck to the back of the book. When I peeled it back from the cover, there was one more sentence scribbled down on the dirty yellow page. Ending it all is my only option. I'm so sorry. Please, forgive me. Our third tale of terror this evening is presented by author Chris Phoenix. I give to you Daddy's Little Angel. She has her mother's bright blue eyes. Daddy's little angel does. And the most beautiful smile you've ever seen. She could melt an iceberg, she could. Everyone that knows her just loves her to death. And I'm so proud to call myself her father. She's a gift from above, I know it, which is why I must protect her no matter what the cost. Some people just don't understand. It all started a couple of weeks ago. Some nasty little girl was teasing Katie, my little angel, and she just wouldn't leave her alone. She was saying nasty things, saying how poor she was, and saying she was dirty and such. She just had the filthiest mouth. Little girls shouldn't be so nasty. Well, she followed Katie home that day, throwing dirt at her and telling her to take a bath in it. Well, my Katie showed her what's what. Yes, she did. And Daddy couldn't be more proud. I don't think anyone could hurt a child, even if they don't mean it. Don't get me wrong, but Katie never did anything to anyone, and I love her to death. You gotta understand, I was only being a loving father when I hid the body. You see, we live in a very rural area, and that nasty-mouthed little girl clearly had no business following my Katie in the first place. But I know no one would understand, and I just can't let anything happen to my little angel. Of course, that's when my wife came home and saw that our little girl had a few bruises. Can you believe she actually glared at me? As if I'd ever so much as think of hurting my little angel. Of course, I was upset. But the sweetheart that she is, Katie set her on track, sure enough. She told her how the filthy girl had harassed her and wouldn't leave her alone. And I tell you, that lit my wife right up. She was so angry. I had to restrain her. I was going to call her parents then and there. It was 9 in the evening. Well, I finally talked her down, even though she was furious with me that I hadn't handled it sooner. Of course, by then, she just didn't trust me to settle it no matter what I told her. I said I'd do it first thing in the morning, the next day, but no, no. She insisted she'd call them herself the next day. Even Katie pleaded with her not to call her parents. She said she'd be so embarrassed at school. If everyone found out, she'd run home and told Mommy. Of course, we both knew we couldn't explain that the filthy little girl had gone missing after their little scuffle. Now, could we? I mean, she's my wife, and I loved her, but she just wouldn't understand. But she just sent Katie straight to bed and wouldn't hear another word from me on the matter. Her mind was made up. And she's a very headstrong woman. It's part of her charm. So there's no arguing with her once she's made up her mind on the matter. Well, after that, I went to tuck the little angel in and read her a bedtime story, and she begged me not to let Mommy call the filthy girl's parents. But I told her how persistent Mommy is and that she wouldn't listen to me. Of course, I didn't sit well with Katie at all. She knew that Mommy wouldn't understand, and neither would her schoolmate's Mommy. No, especially not her. I told Katie I'd think of something, and I promised that I wouldn't let anything happen to her. But Daddy's little angel is clever. Daddy's little angel already had her mind made up. I should have understood. The next day I came home to see my wife lying at the bottom of the stairs in a crumpled, bloody heap. There was so much blood, and it had long since dried into the carpet when I got home. She never made it to work that morning. The official story was that she'd taken a nasty fall down the stairs and cracked her head open like an egg on her tumble. But as I look into Katie's eyes, so empty, so emotionless, no, no, no! Daddy's little angel did not hurt anyone that didn't try to hurt her first. She's special. Anyhow, there was a funeral and the whole family showed up. Katie couldn't have been more bored. She just sat there, staring into nothingness, as the eulogy was given. When it came time to view the corpse, she barely gave it a glance. I like to think she's coping with the loss in her own way. Daddy's little angel loved her mommy more than anything. It was just before the burial, the next day, that an investigator showed up at the door. It was Katie that answered as I was rushing to get ready. I rushed to the door as this man was questioning my little girl, gently scooted Katie out of the way and stepped up to the door. "May I help you?" I asked, trying to sound polite. "I need to ask you some questions about the circumstances of your wife's death," the investigator said. "Who are you?" I think some of my frustration was coming through, but it might have been my self-consciousness. "I'm sorry," he said with a laugh. "Detective Kimball, local PD. I just got the results back from the autopsy, and the blunt trauma your wife suffered, and the blood stains found on the carpet don't exactly match up. I was wondering if you could give me a little more insight." "Well, I'd love to, Detective, but as I told the responding officers, I only found the body when I came home from work. I wasn't here to see it happen." The detective tried to speak again, I think, but I cut him off. Frustration was filling me. "If you'll excuse me, we have a burial to attend." I grabbed Katie's hand and walked her out of the door, locking it behind me. I glanced back to see that the detective was watching me as we drove away. Katie was silent the entire trip, there and back, and as soon as we got home, she retreated to her room. The poor baby's had it so rough, all this death surrounding her. I shampooed the carpet as best I could to get the stains out and fixed up dinner for us. We ate in silence, and it filled me with pain to see her suffering. I'll never forget. Just before she got up to take her plate to the sink, she looked at me and smiled so softly. Oh, my little angel has the sweetest smile you ever did see. A couple of days passed, and I thought things were getting back to normal. Well, as normal as they could be, without my beautiful wife to come home to, when it happened. You see, I rush home each day to meet Katie as she's coming in from school. But yesterday I was lost in thought and took my time getting home. You see, the day before, my wife's sister suggested she could come over and bring Katie's cousin to visit, and I couldn't refuse. So I had to get in the mindset. I had to show her we were coping. The house was quiet when I got there, but that wasn't so unusual, as Daddy's little angel tends to keep to herself, and spends most of her time in her room playing with her dollhouse. She's always so clean and always so quiet. I couldn't have asked for a better little girl. I walked up to check Katie's room, and it was empty. I then proceeded to check the rest of the house and found her nowhere until I came to the door leading to the cellar. Odd, it was cracked. I pushed it open and started down the stairs. I could see the light spilling across the floor at the bottom of the staircase, illuminating a small puddle of blood just a foot from the bottom step. "Just hand me the gun," a voice said softly. "I'll get you out of here. Take you somewhere safe." I rushed down the stairs and found Katie standing a mere 2 feet away from Detective Kimball, who sat bound with rope and bleeding from the head. I approached my daughter and eased the gun from her hands, as the detective seemed to eye me with the most dreadful gaze anyone's ever given me in my life. I took the gun in my hands,
and was surprised at how natural it felt, though I'd never held a gun in my life. The exhilaration that filled me as I lifted the gun and watched the detective's face contort in horror almost sickened me. "Why have you come?" I asked them, as I aimed the gun at his head. "Your wife's death was not an accident," he replied. "I was at work when it happened, and Katie was at school. It was deemed an accident. What did you hope to find here?" "The coroner stated that she died in the early morning, around the same time you leave for work."
"I loved my wife."
Unconsciously, I began to pull the hammer back. "If you kill me, the police will know where to look," Kimball pleaded. "There's no way out of this. Do the right thing. Do it for your little girl." "If you only understood." I put a bullet in his head. That's all I could do. Of course, I knew he was right. I knew the cops would come soon, looking for him. I turned to my girl. She stood staring at Kimball, vacantly. And I told her to run and get the tarp from the coroner. She did. Daddy's angel is so good, she even helped me wrap the body. And I carved. My sister-in-law showed up that night with her husband and kid, as she said she would, and dinner was ready by 8:30. I really think they loved it, my new recipe. I think they'll be back for more. Thanks for joining me tonight for Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you like what you heard and would like to hear a premium, extended edition of tonight's episode, which includes two more terrifying tales, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, where you can sign up for a season pass and get access to all 24 ad-free extended episodes from this season, or sign up as a patron for just $5 per month and get access to not just my show, but our network's audio archive of hundreds of previous releases, including premium versions of our other shows. Not only that, but you'll be lending your support to this very program and help me continue bringing nightmares to life each and every week. Thanks again to today's sponsor, Shudder, for their support of this show. Don't forget, as a listener, you can get 30 days of Shudder totally free by using promo code TOLD. Once more, to try Shudder free for 30 days, go to Shudder.com. That's Shudder.com and use promo code TOLD to let them know that Otis Gyre sent you. And you won't be sorry you did. Until next week, stay spooky and get some sleep, if you can. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyre. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschen. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyre channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's OTIS@simplyscarypodcast.com.
If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.